everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, off and running on our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Tom engineering and producing our program. Tom, we had, I don't know, a good little rain during the night. We may get some more. Shower or two, so it's
that's the expectation. That's the expectation. That's the expectation from the National Weather Service.
We're certainly in the middle, aren't we? Of the we're getting getting kind of the
Southern California leftovers.
Well, yeah, the atmospheric the atmospheric river is kind of a stream or a little creek. By the time it reaches us, but we certainly need the rain. Wednesday, February 7th, 2024 edition of the Buckmaster Show. We are in year 14 with this radio project that I started in January of 2011 after 22 years over on the TV side at Arizona Public Media. The radio station coming to you that we are coming to you on is 1030 KVOI. The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. You can listen to the program live by our live stream on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. And, of course, we have all of our programs nicely archived for you going all the way back to that first week in January in 2011. The Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we check in with the Tucson City Councilman, the Democrat who represents Ward 6, Steve Kasachek. Councilman, how are you recovering from that dog bite?
If you'd have asked me that 2 days ago, I would have said I'm out running again and things are all great. And then last night, the infection re-emerged. And so after we hang up from this, I'm heading off to the doctor to get back on some more antibiotics. It's crazy. You just don't realize that, you know, man's best friend carries a lot of bacteria around. And this guy put his fangs into my calf muscle, and I still had about an hour left to run that morning. And so for the next hour, I was effectively pumping the bacteria in through my system. And so a couple lessons learned is, number one, don't give the bacteria a four-day head start before you start on the antibiotics. And secondly, make sure you get the person's name and contact information at the site, and just don't take their word for it that they're going to show up at your office, because he didn't for 10 days.
Oh, my goodness. And, of course, you worry about rabies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So when it happened, I'd turn around, and what I asked him was, has your dog had his shots? And he says, yes. He knew me by name. He says, yeah, he has. I'll bring the paperwork up to your office. You know, you don't get two bites at that apple. You know, that's a fatal disease, and there's no cure for it once it's in you. So, you know, I foolishly rolled those dice based on his assurance, and it was not a stray dog and all that. So it wasn't a high risk animal. But the real drag is the bacterial infection that gets in systemically, and it'll knock you out. And testament to that right now.
Oh, boy, that is just a mess. So I assume the dog had its rabies shots.
He had, and 10 days after the fact, I got that paperwork. But, you know, so that's good.
Yeah.
The rest of it is just lessons learned, you know, for me. Mm-hmm. You clean the exterior of the wound. That's the tip of the iceberg. You know, what's inside of you and is already floating around in your system.
Yeah.
That's why you got to get on the antibiotics quickly.
Quickly, certainly. Well, I'm sorry that happened to you. The council, is there going to be a special election in August, Steve Kasachek?
Well, we called one. Excuse me. We called one last night. We called 4-1 last night, August the 6th. The purpose of our calling the election, there are two reasons. Number one is there are conflicting legal opinions on whether or not the city can run a special election in a non-even numbered year, and so we want to get a year where there's not a general election. So we want to get the court's opinion as to whether or not we can have a special election in August and not wait for the November regular. So until we called the election, the court didn't have any basis to rule. So that's one of the reasons. that we're putting it out there. The other reason, though, assuming we are allowed by the courts, is that if we're going to put something on the ballot, and it could be any several number of things, we really have to have time to flesh out what it's going to be, what the ask is going to be, what it's going to cover, put together the details so that the public can be fairly educated by the time, you know, the election comes around. You know, this could be anything from a dedicated funding source for public safety to a the city of Tucson going it alone and not participating in RTA Next. It could be a variety of different things. And so we need to, number one, we need to get the court decision. Given the timing, we expect that to happen relatively quickly. And then we'll sit down and start putting the meat on the bones as to, you know, so what is this going to be, you know, now that we know that we can hold the election.
Across the country, you're seeing groups that are calling for ceasefires in Gaza. Has that now reached the Tucson City Council?
Yes, we have had a group of people coming down for probably the last 2 months. So the October 7th Hamas attack, which, by the way, was a violation of a ceasefire that was existing at the time, that started the meter, and we've had groups coming down. I met with a group, one of the groups they called Jewish Voices for Peace. They said they wanted to reach out to me and meet to talk about a ceasefire resolution. I wrote back and I said, I understand you have a resolution draft that you're floating around. I'd like to see that before we meet. So they sent it to me, and it's basically what you would expect it to be. It's, you know, the Israel is bad and Palestine and Gaza is good, and so tell Israel to stop bombing us. I mean, that, you know, I'm grossly paraphrasing. I wrote them back, and I said, if I'm going to sign on to any kind of a resolution, it's going to need to do a few things. Number one, it's going to have to explicitly call out Hamas for their barbarism and their brutality on October 7th. It's going to have to specifically call out Hamas for building tunnels under hospitals and schools and using people as human shields. It's going to have to specifically give assurance for Israel's right for safe and secure borders. And then I threw in there, oh, by the way, my last name is Kozachik. You know, where have you all been for the last 2 years while Putin's been running roughshod over Ukraine? If we're going to call out one, let's call out everybody. Mm-hmm. Based on that, they said they'd still like to meet, and we did, and we had a civil meeting. And the takeaway was that if we're going to put a resolution out, number one, I don't think Hamas and I don't think Netanyahu are waiting to hear what the Tucson City Council has to say.
No, I don't think so.
But they said that there's a crescendo of cities across the country that are passing these, and with enough of them, then it might bear some fruit in D.C. and affect policy. So I said, okay, if I'm going to sign on to anything, it's going to be all-encompassing. It's going to be everybody, everywhere, quit your bombing, and let's figure out how to get along. And so I sent them a draft of it, and that's the last I heard from that group. They were again at the council chambers last night, and also I will say that there were some people who showed up last night for the first time who were saying that any kind of a ceasefire resolution that's aimed solely at Israel is anti-Semitic in their words, and not helpful. In fact, it's a hindrance. So
okay.
It's, you know, this is not top of mind. I mean, obviously you turn on the news and it's horrendous. You know, I'm not downplaying, you know, what's happening. But, you know, we're talking about special elections. We're talking about the RTA. We're talking about police and fire and roads and, you know, the plastics program. The stuff that we're doing locally really is I think, more germane to the work of the Tucson City Council and mayor.
All right.
Than trying to engage in international politics.
All right, Steve Kosacek, before we bring in talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, a listener wanted to know, a listener did not want to go on the air, but Tom has relayed what it was more about this special election. Why the hurry and why not wait till November? I think you kind of articulated a little bit on that. Do you want to summarize that again for us?
Yeah, primarily we want to, so there's a value, some see a value in running a special election so you're not down ballot and you're the last thing people read. And so if we are the only thing on the ballot, which is what would happen in a special election in August, then that's the focal point. That's what people are voting on. It's not let's go through the senators and let's go through the representatives and all the other statewide elections. And, oh, by the way, the city of Tucson's asking for a sales tax increase. So that's really it, is to make sure that question would be front and center on people's minds.
All right. Now, I do want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. And I don't know if you've heard, Councilman, but they had applied for a liquor license. It was granted by Pima County, and now they are utilizing it. So they do have wine available. They have champagne for your mimosas. They have, I believe the beer they're pouring up there is Peroni from Italy. I could be wrong. I think I saw a Peroni bottle. But anyway, so now you can have a alcoholic drink with your breakfast or your lunch. So check it out at Mona's Danish Bakery. Any comment on that, Steve?
Beer and donuts. Beer and donuts. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, it does sound like a plan. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More at monasdanishbakery.com. And more with Steve Kasachek right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition on February 7th. We are off and running on the first full week of February. Once a month, sometimes twice a month, we'll bring in Tucson City Councilman, Democrat Ward 6, Steve Kasachek. You know, there are three economic pillars to this area: University of Arizona, DM, and Raytheon. And when the UA sneezes, Tucson can get a cold, and that's why I want to bring up these possible layoffs going up to 15%. In fact, all university budget units have been asked to prepare. And the low end would be 5, the top end 15. And now there's concern about this Huron Consulting company that has been hired or will be hired by the Arizona Board of Regents, according to the Arizona Daily Star, to assist with the UA restructuring. And this company has built a reputation, apparently, of slashing budgets and instituting layoffs at universities across the country. Your comment, please, Steve Kasachek.
Well, a few things. First of all, Huron is also got a history of being connected with the Arthur Andersen / Enron scandal back a couple of decades ago. That was their culture then. To their credit, they got rid of some of the leadership people who were involved in that scandal. But one has to wonder whether or not that is the culture of the organization or not. So I guess we will see going forward. It seems to me that if you are hiring an independent outside audit firm, reaching into the applicant pool and pulling one out that was associated with the Enron scandal is probably not the best look, especially considering the fact that you're already under scrutiny for not having your eye on the ball in terms of the finances at the U of A. There are several major cost sources at the U of A right now that they're being pointed to. Number one, not in any particular order, but one of the significant ones is institutional spending, that is U of A spending their own dollars on investing in research and development, as opposed to getting outside grants to fund them. That's about $150 million that's added to the problem that that the university's got. Another one that is near and dear to my heart is the athletics department. Bobby Robbins, President Robbins, has admitted that throughout COVID and post-COVID, he has, in air quotes, loaned to ICA, Intercollegiate Athletics, he's loaned them roughly $87 million. Last week, he also, for the first time, said it's highly likely that those dollars will never be repaid by athletics. Well, they're coming from somewhere. And there was a protest on campus yesterday where about 150 faculty and staff showed up and were protesting the fact that they're being charged with being laid off right now as a result of some of the administrative bloat and some of the spending that's been going on. Now, understand that that athletics has engaged in significant capital expansion, the north end zone of the stadium, rebuilding of the east side of the stadium, Richard Jefferson Gymnasium, a new aquatics facility, a new practice facility. Some of those are paid for by donor dollars. Some of it is institutional dollars. And so it is a mixed bag in terms of where those dollars come from. But for Robbins to be essentially gifting to athletics $87 million, and that is on top of $32 million they were in the hole last year and another $30 million this year, also on top of the fact that they're paying Rich Rodriguez and Kevin Sumlin roughly $6 million each to buy out their contracts when they headed down the road. Sean Miller, about $1.5 million for him heading down the road. And now Dave Hickey, the athletics director, is going to continue collecting his salary until March of next year, another $1 million+. So I think that the faculty, staff, and students, when they're looking at program cuts and potential layoffs, have quite a bit to be concerned about. I mean, you look at some of the salaries the people are making. Hickey made $875,000 a year. Michael Dakey, who's running the health vice president in health sciences, is $958,000 a year. Laura Todd Johnson, $454,000. John Dudas, he works in Robin's office, another $454,000. I worked there for 32 years, and I will freely concede naivete that I didn't realize that there were people making north of $500,000 a year as in a public sector institution to do that, to kind of work they're doing. The College of Medicine's making $822,000. You know, this is College of Eller Business and Management, Canada, is making $620,000. These are big dollars, and you've got teaching assistants who are eligible for food stamps. You've got faculty over there who are making $60,000, $70,000 a year. Bobby Robbins is paid 21% of his salary annually dedicated to allocate into his retirement fund. In 1 year, he gets roughly $171,000 just for that. That's triple the salary of many of the faculty who are teaching on campus right now. So they've got a lot of explainer to do. I was glad to see Katie Hobbs, the governor, finally reach out and say a few things. Number one, she said that the guy that you've got managing, in quotes, the or investing, who took over CFO for Lisa Rolney, John Arnold, he can't simultaneously fix a problem ABOR helped to create and work both sides of the fence. He can't be on ABOR and he can't be the CFO. So
right.
She said get somebody more neutral than that. And secondly, an independent outside auditor. And finally, she kind of tickled the notion that I've been pretty blunt about, is that maybe we got the wrong guy at the helm. You know, Bobby Robbins might be a great heart surgeon, might have been a great heart surgeon. The question is not, do you know how to spend other people's money? Is, do you know how to manage it? And he has clearly shown that the answer to that second question is no. And I have publicly and openly supported him being replaced and bring in somebody who's got more business acumen. And frankly, somebody who's not flying around to all the athletic events all over on private jets and sitting in the front row at McHale Center and being on the sideline and glad-handing the coaches and the student-athletes. And, you know, it's nice that he's a fan. That's not his job.
Let me ask you, this problem at the U of A has really trickled over to, well, when there's big layoffs, that's going to impact the city of Tucson economy. But also this the bus fares, that's partially tied. I know that came up at the council yesterday, correct?
Yeah, we pushed it off, but we have had that exact conversation that you're mentioning, is what is the U of A's role potentially in making up the bus fares? And we know that roughly 70% of the ridership on the streetcar are students. We know that a high percentage of the ridership on SunTran are faculty, staff, and students getting to campus and back. So we've taken the position that not only the U of A, but Pima College and TOSD, because they are large benefactors of that public service, that they ought to help fund the fare box. Robbins has said up until now that he's not inclined to do it. And frankly, he's not in a position to do it now. I mean, there's no way that we can lean on the University of Arizona right now to help pay any kind of the fare box loss that we're suffering from offering free fares. Not in their current situation.
How is the situation with the budget as you're looking toward the 24 cycle?
We did have a pretty extensive review of that yesterday. We have some challenges. Those challenges are the direct result of the flat tax that the state legislature implemented. That will cost us $27.5 million just this fiscal year. And if you add to that the drop in corporate taxes, it can be bumping $50 million next year. So we have we're on a trajectory right now that we have to get our arms around it. What I said at the council meeting yesterday was credit to us for being able to look out 3, 4, 5 years in advance and making the adjustments now and not doing what the U of A did, is that realized midway through the semester that we're missing $250 million.
Is the staffing looking good at the city of Tucson? I know there was some shortage in areas, but are things looking a lot better, Steve Kasachek?
We will always be short-staffed in police. It is just a very difficult position to hire for. But yeah, we're hiring. We did a market survey and made adjustments to salaries across the board a year and a half ago. So yeah, we're doing okay. With the caveat that hiring cops is always going to be difficult. While you're talking about staffing, though, I do want to throw this out there, is that Mike Ortega, city manager, has announced his retirement, and he's working his way through this final budget cycle. So he's probably out of here April-ish, and that's going to be a big loss for the city and for the community. He's a quality guy, he's sharp, and he's really helped us to come from when he was first hired on about eight or nine years ago. We were facing deficits coming out of the recession. we now have a pretty healthy cash carry forward, even though with the changes in state tax law, that's now being affected. But Mike has done a great job for the city, and only wish him all the best and he and his family going forward.
The Goldwater Institute, and I'm quickly running out of time, looking at a suit against Tucson over the prevailing wage ordinance. Quick comment, Steve Kasachek.
They actually filed suit against Phoenix, and we joined as a party because we passed on an almost identical ordinance. It will be up to the court to decide whether or not the voters approved the ability for localities to adopt a minimum wage. The state legislature said you can't adopt a prevailing wage, and so the court will determine whether or not those two are equivalent, or if the state legislature statute prevails. And so, you know, we're in it with Phoenix, and you know, we'll see where it goes. I will say that it's not going to surprise me if the state legislature ordinance or statute prevails.
All right, Steve Kasachek, we'll let you get over to your doctor about to have him, he or she, take a look again at that dog bite and prescribe a different, perhaps, antibiotic to really go after that.
We're all over it. Appreciate it. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you very much. Steve Kasachek with us on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Albrecht Claassen. Claassen is coming up right after the break. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat. And on the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks. It is our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We love Green Things, 3384 East River Road. And all the Green Things say, thank you, Mother Nature, for all the rain. Everything at Green Things looks greener. I'm pretty sure about that, and this is a perfect time because we're going to have a lovely spring with this rain that we've had. So perfect time to go over to Green Things on their 13-acre site by the Brandy Fenton Park there on East River Road. The website's greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business, their website is zocalovillage.com. The sister business is beautifully integrated into the property, and that's Zocalo Village. Beautiful imported items, some from Europe, a lot from Latin America, including some incredible pottery from Mexico. So a lot going on over at Green Things. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We always like to bring in Dr. Albrecht Clausen into the studio, but his schedule did not permit it today, so we did the next best thing and bring him in on our live line. Dr. Clausen, renowned scholar of medieval history, recently minted Fulbright scholar. He is a University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies who has published more than 100 scholarly books and hundreds of articles and book reviews, along with a dozen volumes of poetry. He's got a new volume. We'll talk about that in a minute. He has 4 volumes of essays and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won so many honors, including the Grand Knight Commander, the most noble order of the Three Lions, in recognition of outstanding service to German studies. He's the editor-in-chief of the international online journal, which is titled Humanities, which I believe is based in Switzerland. His recent books, there are a lot of them, the most recent, Wisdom from the Middle Ages and Humanities in the 21st Century. Dr. Clausen, how are you, sir?
Thank you very much, Bill. It's wonderful to be with you, and at a day when it's raining. And in February, what could be better for Southern Arizona? Thank you.
I know. We love the rain, especially in February, because as I was mentioning about Green Things, this will shape up to be a beautiful spring, and we need that right now. I want to talk a little bit about your upcoming Valentine's Day event, which is 1 week from today. It's only an hour long, but there's a lot of content in there. The title is The Middle Ages and Its Magic. What's that all about?
Well, okay, so you have introduced me as a medievalist, as an historian, cultural historian, and so I will introduce people to a period, time period, culture period that is of great interest to the public. I know that, namely the European Middle Ages with all of its mystique and magic. But it is not just a playfulness. It is not just simply fantasy, but rather an exploration of deeper messages that we can glean from that time period pertaining to actually mental health, spiritual health, medical health, and maybe aesthetics, maybe a sense of the identity one has within the larger context. And we talked about nature. I heard you talking about that at length. And this is really one of the key issues maybe modern people have lost a little bit, which we might rediscover when we turn to the Middle Ages, namely the contextualization of the individual in the larger context of all things. We have these two wonderful terms, microcosm and macrocosm. So microcosm, of course, is our world, whereas the larger context, whether you fill this with religious components or not, doesn't matter. But the macrocosm is sort of the larger context we live in and by. So the talk will really try to address some of the secret magical things from that time period. I will not just simply sweep over the negative things, but every society has negative things. And I will highlight some of the absolutely beautiful spiritual as a musical, aesthetical, but also medical and scientific aspects characteristic of that time period.
What about so the mist? What about mysticism? When I say mysticism in the Middle Ages, Professor, what do you think of?
Yeah, this is a fascinating topic and should really be of greatest interest, particularly for women, because mysticism was a religious experience or movement which affected primarily women in the 12th and 13th, maybe also 14th century. And those who were acknowledged as mystics gained tremendous power. I mean, we tend to think about the history of women being a history of repression and subjugation, muteness, and so forth. Whereas when we think about the history of mysticism, it's the very opposite. When you are a mystic and you are acknowledged by the official church, you are more powerful than the Pope.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
No, I can't.
You are regarded as God's mouthpiece because you had these visions. So you have tremendously influential mystics throughout the Middle Ages and early modern times. One of the latest one was Maria Teresa of Avila, Teresa of Avila, 16th century. And, you know, popes, kings, emperors, they all trembled when those women spoke up and reported about their perspective about the social well-being of society. Powerful, incredibly powerful. And we forget all that, so I will bring that back a little bit into the awareness, so to kind of to shake up our general understanding, what we can learn from the past and understand its beauty, but also its secrets.
You know, I brought up on my Facebook page, and I'm very proud of the fact I have quite a few people that do follow me on Facebook, and and I know you do as well. I did bring up February 1st. I find that very interesting because that is St. Bridget's Day in Ireland, and in Ireland they believe spring begins on February 1st. And here in Tucson, it's kind of that way too. When you think about it, we probably we're the last place in North America that gets the autumn leaves and color, and we're probably the first that brings in spring. Now, do you know about Saint Bridget? Was she one of these mystics, or was she before the Middle Ages?
No, Saint Bridget was a Swedish woman, a noble woman. She had 14 children, whom she later left behind in Sweden. She went down to Rome. That's all 14th century, early 14th century. And she had also visions, and she ended her life as a very famous, highly influential, mystical writer. So I take an approach that is as scholarly as possible. And I always say, I do not know anything about mysticism. I can read the text, I can study the context, but what those mystics reported about, I don't know. That is a religious experience. So, you know, we just observe this as a phenomenon, which is very, very powerful. But can we really understand it? Mm. That's another question.
Yeah.
So,
I do want to say your event, and I didn't say where it is, and it's very convenient, Midtown. It's over at Himmel Park.
Park Library.
That's one of my favorite parks in town, the Himmel Park Public Library, and that will get underway at 4:30 on Valentine's Day, 4:30 to 5:30. I probably should, well, maybe I will introduce this topic before the break, and then we'll pick up on it after the break. But I want to talk about migration, which is a huge issue with the border and, of course, people migrating all over the world, coming to different places. And I'm wondering, you know, when you think about migration in the Middle Ages, you think people just didn't move around. But people did move around, didn't they, Professor?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. That's a fantastic question. I'm working on this topic quite a lot. There is a complete misunderstanding. Once again, I mean, history is a topic filled with misconceptions and misnomers. And one of those is that's what you address, that people in the past, maybe just even, let's say 50 years ago, people didn't move. Only we are mobile and no one else in the past. So this is so wrong. We have roads all over Europe, roads and ship lines all the way to the Black Sea, from there all the way to China. We have many roads through Northern Africa, and the roads were filled with merchants, pilgrims, scholars, medical doctors, masons, artists, architects, politicians, diplomats, women and men. So it really a very, very different situation. Of course, farmers, peasants, in other words, were not really very mobile, but that's the same situation even today, because when you have to take care of animals, you all know this limits your mobility to some extent. So that is a very important insight, that the previous generation were certainly much more mobile than we might have thought, and that applies also to the Middle Ages.
I was thinking about xenophobia, and I think that when people are different, when you were thinking about migration, even in the Middle Ages, I'm sure that when strangers, let's put them, people who are different, people who are often referred to, Professor, as the others, when they showed up in the villages in the Middle Ages, there was a natural suspicion, wasn't there?
Don't you think that's still the same today?
Yeah. Yes. That's why I bring it. That's why I brought it up.
So I remember my wife and I, we had our little son crossing the Appalachian Mountains to go to a conference in Kentucky. And I remember we stopped, that's now about 30 years ago, we stopped in the middle of the mountain at the gas station, and the situation was so hostile. My wife is Japanese American, and no one talked to us. Everyone stared at us. We just got out of it as fast as we could. It's horrible. However, I have to say Tucson is a much better place. Tucson is a fantastic place in that regard. So open-minded. I really feel very much at home. I think my wife feels at home here as well. So that is a very, very positive thing. So, but you're asking about the past. Of course, people were xenophobic. Of course, people were hostile to foreigners many times. At the same time, we have lots of reports, let's say, of Arabs traveling through Europe. A little bit difficult. They didn't speak the languages. We have visits by Spanish diplomats in northern Germany. It's always the intellectuals who, of course, embrace and welcome foreigners and recognize that they are enrichment of their own world, whereas the others, they see them as a threat, they don't understand them, and they're simply afraid and hence resort to stereotypes and xenophobia, maybe racism and so forth.
All right.
Nothing really has changed that much.
No, that's why I brought it up, Professor Clausen.
Yes.
All right, let's pick up our conversation, but let's take a break.
Yes.
It's the Buckmaster Show on a Wednesday. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cunada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things. Zocalo Village Studios send a lot of our listeners over to a beautiful area of New Mexico, the land of enchantment. That would be Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, approximately from the Tucson Valley. I would suggest going to their website, southwestnewmexico, spelled out, .org, O-R-G, and you will be tempted by many outdoor activities and some really beautiful activities in very historic Silver City, all that Victorian architecture. Lots to do, great places to stay, and great places to dine as well. Dr. Albrecht Clausen is with us on the live line, renowned scholar of medieval history and UA Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He's also in 2022 spent a semester in Cairo as a Fulbright scholar. He'll be speaking about the Middle Ages and its magic on Valentine's Day, 1 week from today, Wednesday the 14th, and that will be from 4:30 to 5:30, and that will be at the Himmel Park Public Library. Dr. Clausen remains with us on the line. He's published a couple of, about a dozen books on poetry. You have a new one, I believe, about from Hawaii.
That's right. I have a connection to Hawaii through my wife. And last time I was there, I decided to create a new book. I took photos, really beautiful, beautiful photos by really close-up taking photos. And then accompanied those then with haikus, which is one of my most favorite medium to express maybe my admiration, intrigue, and fascination with nature and the forces of nature. It kind of connects with what we talked about before, the microcosm and macrocosm, kind of how do you get an idea of the larger things that determine life globally. And most people are blind to those or ignorant. But when you write poetry, in a way, you are gifted. I'm not saying I'm a mystic, but I'm gifted in a way, being able to formulate certain ideas that just pop up in my mind in light of the photos. And so this new volume is out. It's available. It's an online e-book and very easy to purchase via, of course, Amazon or wherever, or the publisher itself.
Question from a listener about your upcoming event on Valentine's Day, wondering, is there a connection between mysticism and St. Valentine's Day?
No, I don't think so at all. Mystics were very unorthodox individuals who had very individual experiences upon which they then reflected in writing or with music or paintings. Whereas Valentine's Day, I mean, it's just a nice coincidence, was simply a day from folk culture and old Christian calendars to give people a sense of holiness and or sanctity and then happiness, connecting that with love. So that is really a worldly day of celebration, whereas mysticism is something really, really private, intimate. Only when it spills out into public becomes a huge, powerful phenomenon, something we have a hard time even to comprehend. But it's extremely powerful and important to keep that in mind.
And it's very unusual that St. Valentine's Day and Ash Wednesday would coincide this year. So that's kind of an unusual coincidence.
Right, right.
I want to ask you about your new book, it's a book you're working on. Every time period in history has its tyrants. You're working on a book about tyrants in the Middle Ages.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm so happy that you asked me this. Manuscript is already with a publisher. I just have to review it one more time, and then it can hopefully go into print in the next few months. So people might wonder, why am I studying and teaching the Middle Ages?
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
a time period very far away, but as some of your questions already indicated, that past, of course, as different as it is from our own world, can beautifully serve as a springboard for reflections on our own conditions. So while we talked about mysticism as sort of the spiritual dimension, in my new book, I take a very concrete political view. Actually, I start out with reflections on current tyrants, far and close by. And then I move from there into the literary evidence and, for example, Dante, whom everyone knows, Divine Comedy in the 12th circle of hell, in the 12th canto, he has a place specifically for the tyrants. So in other words, in human society, past and present, you have always the danger that society falls into the trap of dictators and tyrants. You know, there are so many countries in this world where you have tyrants. I don't want to mention any at this point, but I address that in this book. Lots of examples where criticism of the rulers become the central theme, and that gives us a very different perspective and suddenly an understanding why we would want to study the Middle Ages as a great sort of analogy to our own time. So sometimes a distant mirror helps us better to understand our current situation and thereby to start criticizing and reflecting critically on our own conditions.
All right, Dr. Albrecht Clausen, always a pleasure. And once again, everyone is invited to your talk over at the Himmel Park Library 1 week from today. It'll be about an hour, 4:30 to 5:30. Should be very interesting at the library at Himmel Park. Want to wish you and yours well and hope you have a great afternoon.
Thank you very much, Bill. I always appreciate it and hope to see many people in the audience. They're all invited. And we have questions and answers afterwards.
All right.
Thank you so much.
We'll look forward to you being back with us in studio. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
All right. Bye. Dr. Albrecht Clausen with us on the Buckmaster Show. And that is going to bring to a close our hour. We do this hour Monday through Friday right here on 1030 KVOI. And we'll be back with you in about 23 hours, give or take. A few minutes with the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. Have a great afternoon, everybody.